Well, welcome everyone to Advancing Advocacy. I'm Brenda Jones, the host for the evening, and Jennifer's my co-host and jack of all trades in the background. And we have for you tonight Susan Walker, who's from one of our Colorado affiliates. She has a lot of experience working on building coalitions and building partnerships with other organizations across her state, and we invited her on this week to share some of that knowledge with us. And Susan, if there's anything else you want to add before you get started, feel free. But with that, I will put myself on mute and hand it on over to you.
Thank you. Thanks so much. I do want to say good evening to everyone, and especially thank Brenda and Jennifer for their help getting ready for this presentation tonight. Thank you all for listening in. It's not easy to build coalition. It's hard work, as I'm sure all of you know, but it's also worthwhile and incredibly important. To coalesce simply means to come together. Obviously, there are different degrees of coming together, but in my mind's working definition, a coalition doesn't have to include a formal agreement, although in some instances it may. In fact, some of our present or future coalition partners, whether it be on the state level or the national level, may be entities that can't, in many situations, sign a formal agreement with us, a formal working agreement. Nevertheless, we often coalesce without a formal working agreement to bring about needed changes. In Colorado, a good example of that is the relationship that has existed between the Sex Offender Management Board and what I may call the SOMB for the rest of the talk, and the Registered Citizen Advocate groups. While we didn't like each other very much when we began to come together, our relationship has grown into one of cooperation and sometimes, yes, even respect, as we have experienced the give and take that can happen when we coalesce with our differences, we come together to bring about needed changes. Sometimes it feels like a slow dance with a small movement forward and an equal or larger one backward. While Colorado's journey into this arena may not be the prime example of the way to do it, here's how we did it, and here's how we are doing it and what we've learned. I decided to use five words that begin with C to give us a little bit of a roadmap through the discussion tonight. The first word that I'd like to use is the word caring. This is the story of four who made an ultimate sacrifice and stepped up to the plate. The first attempt in Colorado at having a group that advocated for registered citizens, those with a sexual offense in their past, was Colorado CURE. And I'm sure most of you are familiar with CURE. CURE members with families and friends convicted of a sexual offense began a group, a monthly group that was called the Sexual Offense Issues Group, or SOIG. The group offered a gathering where a couple of CURE board members talked about the latest challenges from the fairly confrontational approach toward those who had sexually offended here in Colorado. Unfortunately, there was minimal emphasis in that group on discussion and sharing of ideas regarding positive changes that needed to be made in the system, and also minimal activity expended toward change. At least that's the way it felt to those of us who were our family members and friends were just getting into the system, and we were looking for something that hopefully had a little bit more bang to it than what we felt like we were experiencing, although I'm certainly very grateful that CURE started the ball rolling. Four people attending the SOIG meetings became somewhat frustrated with the format that didn't promote change or didn't seem to, at least not fast enough for us. And about the same time that CURE expressed concern that some SOIG attenders were making more waves than CURE wanted the SOIG to make. A short period of disagreement, and with CURE's decision to dissolve the SOIG, we were in essence given their blessing to start our own group. CURE really wanted to focus on the needs of those that part of the prison population that did not have a sexual offense, not because they weren't interested in that area, but because it seemed that the needs of the families and friends and the persons who had committed a sexual offense were so much greater in terms of what the system demanded from them and took from them than sometimes was true for others. Four of us took the lead and created a group called Advocates for Change, or AFC, as I may use for the rest of the talk. It took a level of caring that affected us personally, some of us more than others, to get this new group going. While change is frequently needed, it is rarely without some pain, and I'm sure that many of you can identify with that. Many RSOL members understand completely about this level of caring because of the leadership they have shown to build coalition across the country. I myself was actually going to be asked to leave the CURE group at one point in the deliberations because I had done something that I have never done since and shown some unhappiness about something that happened at an SOMB meeting by kind of loudly putting my books down on the table and leaving the room. And one of the CURE folks that was there didn't think that was a very professional way to act, so I was put on the chopping block at one point. And so it was actually a cost for a number of us who, until the waves kind of settled down and people started realizing that it was really a good thing that this happened. And we'll talk more about how we work together with the CURE folks today to make things move forward. All that said, just to show that caring, how much we care, has a lot to do with how willing and able we are to kind of stick with the battle through the difficult times. So the moral of the story around caring, sometimes the road to necessary change means sacrifices that affect us greatly. Obviously, we have to be cautionary and smart, but we've got to move forward because we do care. The next C word that I want to talk about is commitment. It's necessary to care enough to be committed. Commitment relates to the long haul, the pain, the temporary or sometimes permanent separations and disagreements that can result from caring enough to be committed to the tasks before us. RSOL, Colorado's advocacy groups, as well as the operations of one or many in your states, have struggled at times with criticisms, belittling, threats, false rumors, or just plain being ignored. Attending SOMB meetings in Colorado and serving on committees in the early days demanded, and actually still demands, a level of commitment that gives a person the strength to sit through sometimes adversarial attacks that are hurled by various SOMB or subcommittee members. They're all done with a reasonable amount of trying to be respectful, but people can't show through, and sometimes it's difficult. There are less of those kinds of things going on today than there were 5 or 6, 7 years ago. Sometimes it can mean putting your life and the life of your loved one on the line, almost as a sacrificial lamb, for the years that person is supervised by the system. And in my son and my family's particular case, that's been almost 15 years through the Colorado's Lifetime Act, which was enacted in 1998. That will continue as he has to register for life, which is offense-based. One of the sacrifices that had to be made for our family was that when my son got out of prison, and I'll just tell this brief story to make the point, he was sent to a treatment program here in Denver that was known for being fairly difficult and sometimes heinous in terms of the way that it dealt with people in treatment. One of the things that people had to do when they came into the group was to say, "I am a very dangerous person," and I'm a sex offender and I'm a very dangerous person. Thankfully, that program does not require that anymore. But my son knew that he couldn't make it in that program and that it wasn't the place that he needed to be to finish out the treatment, the many years of treatment and supervision that he still had. And so he asked to go to another treatment program, which was originally okayed by his parole officer. But when his parole officer sent a release of information to the therapist refused to sign it, and things went downhill from there. Noses were snubbed, and within 12 weeks, he was terminated from that treatment program. And in Colorado, when you're terminated from treatment, it's very clear in the standards and guidelines that you will be going back to prison. So we went through some very difficult and scary moments, but Mark had said to me, "Mother, I just know that this is not the, you know, the right way that people should be treated in a treatment class, and I just can't stay here." So he was willing to put his life on the line, and it almost resulted in that. So we were very blessed that his parole officer stood with him and that he was supported in going to another program. So what does it mean to be committed? It means we're in it for the long haul, and we're willing to sacrifice over time to make a difference. The next word I want to talk about is connectedness. It takes tenacity to continue over time in hostile environments, as we all know. Challenges to our system here in Colorado, concepts such as No Known Cure, the Lifetime Act, and confrontational treatment approaches brought Advocates for Change, or AFC, into contact with more people who would become colleagues in the battle. The Director of Sectional Litigation for the Public Defender's Office, who basically was able to create this role for herself, the liaison from the Colorado Criminal Defenders Institute, from the Colorado Criminal Defense Institute to the Colorado Legislature, some treatment providers quickly became allies and the coalescing began. One member of Colorado Cure, a registered citizen himself, consistently keeps us informed on the bill titles of interest, and that saves the rest of us the time from having to pull all that. Why I don't officially belong to CURE, the man mentioned, is definitely a colleague when it comes time to testify at the legislature as well. I also work closely with another CURE member who is known as everyone's mom, and she works with people that have life sentences for murder and similar offenses. She frequently, because she's well known, gets referrals from people that have committed interested in those that have committed sexual offenses, and those people then get referred to me. Another example of a group that was coming into play at that time that became a group that we could coalesce with was a group called the Coalition for Criminal and Juvenile Justice, or CCJJ. That was a group that was actually started by the governor, and the people that belonged to that group were important people in the criminal justice system and in the legislature, DAs and prosecuting attorneys, and there were defense attorneys and legislators and all kinds of folks that, from the Department of Public Safety and the Division of Criminal Justice and on various boards that were very important. While our group could not speak at those meetings, we could attend those meetings. We also were allowed to function on task forces of the CCJJ, and it was there that a number of our advocates were able to be very effective on the committees and work together with the public defense strategist that I mentioned a few minutes ago and so on, and were able to, you know, get some things moved forward. And while there weren't any major kinds of things that happened at the legislature because of that, there were some small things. When you reach coalition, sometimes what you find is that you can't take quite as big a step forward as you might like to sometimes, but when you get everybody to agree on an issue that people really don't agree on, you come out with a fairly small present, but sometimes it's better than not having a present at all. So the CCJJ has been effective in that way to bring varying points of view together to actually get some laws changed at the legislature, albeit not hugely consequential in the long run. The Colorado Criminal Justice Reform Coalition, CCJRC, did not and does not work in the sexual offense arena specifically, but it does refer people to AFC and now to my group, CISO, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. And they also published a Go Book. The Go Book assists with people coming out of prison and gives them lots of resources and ideas for reentry, including housing and jobs and health issues and situations. Just about everything that you can
think of. Hey, Susan? Susan, may I interrupt you?
We have a long-standing relationship with the Colorado Department of Corrections, which brought together the leadership from CDOC, including facility wardens and department heads. I apologize for the dog, and someone's going to get him right now.
Susan, can you hear me?
Facility wardens and department heads, and all of us who had someone in the prisons, we met quarterly for updates regarding what was going on inside and for a question and answer time. This Citizens Advocate Meeting, or CAM, continues to this day, although the format changes with each new executive director for the Department of Corrections. Those meetings have been quite interesting. They actually started out to be fairly dry, but over the years they have materialized into meetings that have become a lot more meaningful in terms of us being able to interact with the folks there. And the prison actually brings all of their wardens and people that are the heads of departments and so on to the Citizens Advocate Meeting on a quarterly basis. And we're able to hear their reports from their departments and interact with the leadership after the meeting. There's usually been 45 minutes or an hour that we're able to ask those people questions. And because of their challenges in our sexual offense stuff here in Colorado, well, it's very helpful to have that time, especially for the families that have just had someone come to prison. As areas of connectedness are discovered, we can often see coalition become a reality. And as a result of our early and difficult work with SOMB, we eventually were able to establish acceptable to good working relationships with parole officers, the Colorado Department of Corrections at all levels, numbers of excellent criminal defense attorneys who specialized in our sexual offense arena, and of course with the Colorado Legislature. You might ask at this point, do you need a formal sex offender management board to move things forward? In my opinion, the SOMB can be a plus or a minus. It is a place once a month that people can gather, people that are connected to the issues around sexual offending. That means that you have representatives there from 26 different government organizations on the board itself, and then parole officers, victims representatives, probation officers, families of persons that are registered or that have a sex offense. And so it's just a very diverse group of people that get together to discuss issues. And we are allowed to talk at those meetings and to share what's on our minds within reason, of course. I am not totally convinced that everybody wants to have an SOMB. The fact that the SOMB in our state is in statute and it's charged via statute with compiling and updating standards and guidelines for the management and treatment of those with a sex offense, and that it as well has representation from the 26 different areas of government. Offender management, supervision, treatment, victims, advocates, DAs, et cetera, makes change difficult. a favorite phrase that we hear when we go to SOMB meetings is that something that can't be changed, quote unquote, because it's in statute. Everybody knows that while it may be difficult, that things in statute can be changed. In states where there is no SOMB, efforts can still be made to connect with the DOC, the parole, probation departments, treatment programs, et cetera. It's with these strange bedfellows that we sometimes can make progress that we didn't think was possible. How does connectedness work? Connectedness happens sometimes by accident and sometimes due to a lot of hard work. Getting to know people who may be engaged in services or advocacy close to what we do by attending their meetings, by taking somebody that you think might be influential and helpful to lunch or breakfast and sharing commonalities, assisting another organization or person with a challenge that they are facing as they try to help a client find housing or a job, finding out what meetings held by people in the system you can attend and learn from. All these are possible paths to coalition. Caring and commitment lead to connectedness. Thinking of a call that I, or an email that I got just before I came on to the meeting tonight from a person who was looking for a nursing home for someone that had come out of prison. She actually works for, this lady works for Colorado COSA, and she had heard some vague mention from my direction of that issue of knowing about respite or nursing care or assisted living care that might be available for someone that had just come out of a nursing facility. And we are letting a lot of older adults out of the system here in Colorado. So those are the kind of things that can be very, very valuable. We have a lady that attends our current meetings who works at a place called Christ Body Ministries, and they are a homeless shelter, but she has 5 respite beds. She's a social worker, and at any given time, 3 of those 5 respite beds are filled with people that are registered. So it is a huge issue for her in terms of being able to find assisted living or nursing home placement, whether it be permanent or temporary. And you just don't always think of those kinds of things when you're thinking about building coalition, but it's a crucial piece that can be used on our behalf and in our direction when it comes to building numbers of people who really understand what's going on in the sexual offense arena. The next thing I'd like to talk about, the next C word, is character. And this, to me, is the crux of the whole thing. It's very crucially important that we do what we say we're going to do. And that's what character is in my mind. It's doing what we say we're going to do. Character can embody many other things in people's minds, maybe loftier words such as morals and ethics. But for our purposes, I'd like to think of it as trustworthiness, being people of our word, and follow through. A standard of practice that those around us can believe in and trust is, for me, what we are always trying to accomplish. It is what keeps people coming back for whatever it is that we have to offer. In marketing, there's always a push to set the bar for accomplishments at a level that we can reach. What happens if the bar is set too high? If it's set too high and promises that we've made are not fulfilled, the trust of the community or the people that we're trying to reach is breached. I think back to the days of the Adult Day Services grant that Seniors Resource Center, an agency that I worked for 11 years, received, and the marketing expert that the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation hired to work with the 50 day centers that were chosen to be part of the grant. This marketing expert made it clear that as part of our Adult Day Center menu, if we said we were going to exercise on a daily basis, we better offer that exercise. We were telling families that when their family member came to the senior day program, there would be an exercise session. If a family paid for a shower 2 times a week while their loved one was at the day center, that shower had to be given. that was not something that we wanted to advertise that we had available if we weren't going to produce it. In my present work, I have many goals that I want to meet on a daily basis. It's always my goal to respond to each letter that I get from correctional institutions. Sadly, I've not been keeping up with that goal as well as I would like to, and I may have to take a look at how I can change my commitment to meet whatever new goal I set. I have tried saying in quarterly newsletters that people should expect it to take at least 3 months for me to get back to them with an answer unless they write time sensitive on the envelope, which means that they're up for a parole hearing or they're desperately ill and not being cared for in the prison system. If they write time sensitive, that I will respond. Well, of course, when I said that, a lot more people started writing time sensitive on their envelopes. But for the most part, they use that wisely, and it alerts me to parole hearings and things that I may need to be involved in. For us, answering our phones and email on a regular basis is crucial in our quest to build trust with our RSOL coworkers and leadership. If an important message that someone expects to be answered goes one way and nothing comes back in time to do something about whatever the issue was, trust can truly be challenged. Resetting a goal for when we will get things answered and then doing it can help to keep that trust in place. There was a time a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, that my son and I decided after four and a half or five years with Advocates for Change that we wanted to do something different. We had been talking at Advocates for Change for about a year about becoming a 501c3 nonprofit organization and had been doing flip chart explanations and different things, having discussions. And the board seemed to, be about split right down the middle as to who wanted to do that and who didn't want to do that. By the time the end of the year came, it just seemed as if we had slightly different missions on our minds. And Mark, my son, really felt that he was being tapped for to do a prison ministry. That prison ministry, if anybody's interested and wants to look it up, is called the Cell Church. And you'll see a picture of my son Mark in his greens, and you'll see a picture of him as the director of the Cell Church. So can read a little bit about what kind of work he's trying to do. I, on the other hand, really did want to become a 501c3 and see whether we could get this unpopular subject of ours any grants. Having written a lot of grants in the past when I was working for nonprofit organizations, I really wanted to see if it was possible to present our product somehow in a way that we were able to interest people in supporting the work that we were doing. So I felt that I needed to leave at that time, and I wanted to also enlarge the world of people with whom I could coalesce and with whom CSOAR Coalition could coalesce. It was really important for me to be able to lead that organization in an atmosphere that created new opportunities for coalition building. There was a certain standard of performance, follow-through, and trustworthiness that I wanted to portray, including things such as answering the phone when it rang or returning phone calls within a short period of time, returning emails daily, putting out high-quality articles in newsletters. So what I did in forming CSOAR was began reaching out to the community, to nonprofits and other organizations that were already working with registered citizens in some capacity, but who also had other clients. So examples of the places that I reached out, the areas I reached out in, are with people experiencing homelessness, people who needed respite after hospital stays, which we just talked about a little bit, shelters that provided beds for our population as well as other diverse populations, organizations whose sole purpose was to provide services to veterans, others that signed people of all walks of life up for Medicare and Medicaid plans. That was one I had not expected, to be an area that we would find support and coalescence in. Groups that assisted people in finding jobs, et cetera. All of these organizations and groups had one thing in common, and that was that they all had registered citizens as clients. These are just a few of the possibilities. Our minds sometimes are so limited in the way we look at the world that we don't see all the possibilities that are out there. But those are just a few that have been that have kind of come into my life and into the life of CSOAR as we have tried to build coalition. I began to have lunch with people whose paths I crossed or whose paths crossed mine and found that we had common ground. The fact that we all serve people with sexual offense backgrounds. As long as I engage and serve them when they need help with a client, educate them through quarterly meetings and quarterly newsletters about our issues and always return phone calls when they need help from CSOAR, they are on our team. They clearly see what these men and women are going through, and they want to help make it right. I will give one example. The Volunteers of America has a VA program, a VA Veterans Administration grant, for which they are given a reasonable amount of money to find housing for veterans. The housing situation is difficult here, as I'm sure it is everywhere. I hear stories frequently as I talk to people across the country about how difficult it is to get housing. And they have plenty of money to house people. They can pay for the deposit and pay for the first up to the first 5 months of rent. The person has goals to meet each month, and they can really help someone get off to a really good start. But the problem is that we have a limited number of landlords or companies, organizations that will rent to our population, and so that's the difficult part. And so once they found out about CSOAR and what we were doing, they were a natural partner for us, and we now are meeting with them on a just on the whole housing issue and how we can possibly move forward to help people coming out of prison get housing and how we can make that more feasible and so that people don't end up on the streets. But, you know, when we have a free funding source for part of our population that are veterans, we certainly want to help people take advantage of that. So, and that then becomes a voice that may help us down the road in some other areas. So two main goals going down this path for organizations such as VOA, Volunteers of America, the Veterans Administration, Christ Body Ministries, which I mentioned with the respite program, Step Up Incorporated, which worked with young inner city youth and also had registered citizens in their numbers. Denver Works, which helped people find jobs, provided clothing, helped people write resumes. Denver Human Services, Medicare and Medicaid health plans, churches, and their nonprofit outreaches. We just found that all of these groups and more embodied services that could help those that were in our vision and outreach field at CSOAR. So likewise, as these organizations and people became familiar with CSOAR's mission and the myths and facts of sexual offending, as well as the travesties surrounding the way that registered citizens and their families have to live, they became advocates with us for fixing these challenges. Now, we're still in the very early stages of seeing how all of that will play out, but the building of numbers and people who have been influenced by the registered citizen plight and the plight of their families and so on is growing, and we think that is really, really important. As my son is almost ready to get out of treatment after 15 years, if you can believe that, pretty normal in Colorado, includes treatment on probation, treatment in prison, and treatment on the outside. And he's now 3 years from being able to ask to get off lifetime parole. I decided that it was time for me to start working more on registration issues. And the other battles that Colorado continues to fight remain very challenging. We have not gotten rid of the lifetime. We have gotten rid of the no-known cure language, but not everybody that's doing treatment and supervision of our registered citizens buys the fact that the no-known cure is gone, so we still have that battle to fight, but at least it's out of statute and it's out of the standards and guidelines. Those are the reasons I decided to get more involved in RSOL, because it's time for me to do that. A lot of the folks that I was in Advocates for Change with have still got long prison sentences that their family members are facing, and they're not quite, you know, perhaps as ready for the registration issues as what I was. But hopefully there will be some more coming along here in the near future. It also gave me an opportunity, working more with RSOL, to help build coalition with new state contacts and advocates in the western United States, as RSOL was just beginning to expand its affiliates program to include a coordinator for four different U.S. regions. I am pleased to be able to be that coordinator for the western states, and really having a good time, if one can call, trying to squeeze in some time to call and talk to people in other states. It has just really been, I have to say, fun, exciting, and neat to meet the wonderful people that are out there, that are so many of whom are working by themselves in a state to bring about change. And I think how blessed we are here in Colorado to have two groups now, and plus Colorado Cure and all the other groups that I've mentioned to you tonight that are kind of working on the same issues. And so it's just been really good to be able to meet some of you, and I hope to meet more of you in the future. As I begin to reach out to all the states on my list, which include Alaska and Hawaii, I'm not sure how they got into the western states, but they are, I was able to utilize my philosophy established here in Colorado and in states where there's no real organization for the sexual offense world other than individual parole and probation departments, the DOC, treatment programs, et cetera. I tried contacting those individuals, the ones in the system that I thought might be able to connect me with family members or friends of those with a sexual offense in their past. I have a lot more work to do in that arena. Certainly have not been able to call everybody or to make contact in every state, but it was a successful way to do some outreach in some states. I ran into a treatment program provider in Juneau, Alaska, when I was making some calls early on, who told me that I was lucky that I called her, because most of the other treatment providers in her group would not have been excited to talk to me about the fact that there were actually advocacy groups for registered citizens in the world. So that was good that I got someone who was interested and excited about what we were doing. She couldn't provide me with the name of someone at that time who could serve as a representative for Alaska, but she is an open door for a contact, and I bet you there are more people in Alaska that are open doors for contact as well. So I will keep searching until I find the right person that can connect me with one or two people that do want to be on board as a contact or advocate or be part of RSOL as an affiliate group. I was working on Wyoming recently and found through the parole department a group called Bethel Ministries and a gentleman named Roy who worked with parole on reentry. He, as it turns out, had just rented one of his properties to a registered citizen who is still on paper, and said he would call him and see if he was interested in talking to me about involvement in RSOL as a representative from Wyoming. Turns out the man did give us permission, and Roy called me back with his number. And I have had a chance to talk to him and do some clarification with Brenda on whether folks that are still on paper can actually serve in one of those positions. And she indicates that you know, that is possible for someone that's on paper to go ahead and serve. So I need to get back in touch with that man now, because he was very interested in being a part of what we're doing. So just some ways to open doors that I have found helpful based on my experience here in our state and the fact that we have worked closely with the system. And I'm sure that some of the rest of you have well, and I'll be interested to hear your stories too when we have time for questions here in just a few minutes. So how does character play into coalition building? Reaching out and then doing what we say we are going to do are crucial pieces of creating coalition. People want to be part of what they know they can trust. They want to know that you care, that you're committed, that you're well-connected, and that you have the character to do what you purport to do. Our last word is consistency. And I want us to think of consistency in this situation, not necessarily just of doing the same thing all the time, but I want us to think of us being consistent in our ability and our desire to always reach out for those opportunities that present themselves for coalescing, and likewise to always reach out for what we think may be new opportunities for building coalition. Affordable and available housing is one of the huge issues that we're dealing with here in the Denver metro area right now for registered citizens and their families. Denver is, for some reason, a very popular place to live right now, and housing is scarce, and what housing there is very expensive. We have been meeting with, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, with Volunteers of America and a couple of other groups, a group called Inside Out here in Denver, which runs 5 or 6 homes for people coming out of prison. And because of limitations in the city that those homes are in on how many people with a sex offense can live in each of those homes, there's one person with a sex offense that can live in those homes and 5 or 6 people with other kinds of felonies that can live there in transitional housing. So she's working with us, and then we have another lady that is part of a group called Beyond Containment that works with the Circles of Support and Accountability. She has her own Circles of Support and Accountability programs, actually. And so the four of us are getting together at this time and talking about the housing issues and how we can all work together to try to make that better. Initially, we talked about having a housing event, and this was actually the Volunteers of America VA concept of how to move forward. But as we talked more about it, we felt it would be extremely difficult to get these landlords to come unless we offered them a six-class meal, is that what you call it, 6 classes? No, not classes. What am I thinking of? Six-course meal with martinis and the whole business. So not sure whether we could actually get those folks to come. We thought about inviting people one-on-one to go out and talk with us and see if they could help us with more housing. What has actually happened is that in Denver, because prices are so high, and the profit loss balance is not the way it should be, that people have sold properties here in Denver that we were using as landlords that would accept those folks with that are registered citizens, and they've moved to Colorado Springs where the profit loss margin is better in their favor. So that did not help us at all. We decided to look more at something called housing connectors. And these housing connectors could be pastors, they could be lawyers, they could be just people in our communities that we know, landlords who know other landlords, friends and acquaintances of ours who own property, investors. As we talk to these people, we're enhancing our ability to coalesce around an issue in our city and state, again, building a coalition. I often watch, and I don't know if any of you do, the H&G channel and have been interested in the tiny house movement. Perhaps some of you have seen the tiny houses. They're inexpensive. They're inhabited by a single person or sometimes by a couple, and dogs and cats and so on. they can't be parked everywhere, but they can be parked a lot of places. They might be rentals at first and then available for people to purchase as they stabilize. Could this be one possible answer to our housing problems? I actually sent an email out to the three folks that are part of our little housing discussion right now and said, am I crazy or might this work? And, you know, we are potentially adding tiny house builders, property owners, individual families we know to our list of people with whom we're connected, housing connectors, and also opening a door for sharing the story of the difficulties faced by registered citizens and the myths and facts related to the subject. So embracing consistency is about being consistent in our efforts to coalesce in new and creative ways to solve the challenges we face. And that can mean the difference between being left in the dust and setting a new standard for unusual and exceptional services and ideas. We all excel in our own way in different areas of accomplishment. Our gifts and talents are not the same, but they sometimes do overlap. Not only are we capable of setting new standards for service and problem solving, but we are also moving steps closer to changing the way the world thinks about the human beings who carry the registered citizen label. Thank you so much for letting me share my thoughts with you tonight. I hope that it was helpful and wasn't too rambling, and that you're all saying, man, is that a crazy woman? What in the world is she trying to do? But I welcome hearing from all of you at this point and hearing what you have done in your states or answering any questions that you might have. Thank you very much for the opportunity to talk with you.
Are you there, Brenda?
Just checking. I never can remember whether I'm on mute or not. You got me this time?
You're not.
Okay, I'm not
we
now.
We got
you. I'm going to leave this, I'm going to leave this back on the first page so people have that to look at. Thanks very much, Susan, and welcome. So glad you could be here. And I do want to just go ahead and open it up. Jennifer, did you have any questions before we you press star 6 if anyone has a question to get in the queue. I'm envious, Susan, I will say that because I've often wished I could do more here in Maryland in terms of that. We're just now starting to reach out to other advocacy coalitions that are doing things. And I do know one of the issues that I've had to struggle with has been the education component, even of other advocates, that oftentimes they're happy to work with other advocates, except they think they have to leave the sex offenders out because the assumption is that the registered citizens are going to be too risky or too toxic or whatever the problem is. And so part of my job is generally to get those same myths dispelled with that group as would have to be dispelled to the larger population. Have you found that to be the case oftentimes with your groups?
The one group that has really been a challenge with is CCJRC, which is kind of a general prison reform type of an organization that has been very successful in terms of going to the legislature. And originally we wondered why they were so resistant to working with us, and it became clear after a little while that has totally to do with what you're talking about, and that is that because they've been so successful in Colorado in getting laws changed for people trying to keep people out of prison, has been a lot of it, that they really are afraid to hold hands, so to speak, with those that are working in our arena for fear that they will not be looked at in the same sort of way that they are now. People have more tolerance for
those that have offended with drugs and or perhaps have committed DUIs than they do for people that have committed sexual offenses. So that is, I think, a very, very clear observation that you've made. If I can just comment on one more thing. One thing that I did recently was decided that after 15 years, I was brave and bold enough to go before my church and share. Mark had grown up in our church, and to share briefly the story that we had a sexual offense in our family, knowing that there were other families in the church that also had this experience, but that no one was brave enough to talk about it. And I remember that when he was, just before he was sentenced to prison, we had gone in to talk to the pastor the day before he was sentenced, and he had also been in prison earlier in his life and had worked in prison ministry, and told us that what he should expect and all those sorts of things. And I remember telling him at that time that I did not want anyone to know in the church. I didn't want anyone to know. I didn't want him to talk about it. I didn't care if the pastors knew, but I didn't want the general public to know about it. But after 15 years and all the talking that I've done since then, I decided it was worth it to give it a try. And Pastor Jim Walters gave me 5 minutes over 3 services. There were probably 800 people at least in those 3 services. And I was able to get up and take 5 minutes in each of those sessions to briefly tell the story, and had been able to engage him in writing to a fellow that I was writing to, who was a pilot. And Pastor Jim was a former Air Force pilot, and so that was right up his alley to connect with this guy that was a helicopter pilot. And so when this guy got out here a few months ago, Jim was right on that, and so I also had experience with some other men in the church that had sexually offended and that were coming to church, and that the church had figured out how they were going to deal with all the issues. They have a safety team and so on and so forth. So after that, there was after each service there was a display in the foyer, and so I went out and I had a picture of Mark, my son, and his. Some of his little ministry things, a picture of him when he was little in the kids' choir at the church. And, I tried to just fix it up. I had my display there and so on. It was kind of an experiment. I wanted to see just this whole issue that you're talking about of how hard is it for people, even in that kind of an environment, to grasp that whole issue. Our church also has a sex trafficking ministry, human trafficking. And so that is perhaps, some of those ladies come to church with some of the families. And so that is kind of seen perhaps as the other side of the coin. And that started out very, very small, even being on that side, on the side of the people who were being victimized. So I didn't expect a lot in terms of people stopping at the table. It was very interesting that the people that stopped were people who had been touched by the issue somehow. I had 2 people who were victimized that stopped at the table. One lady who was a victim that left me a $10 donation. This is almost brings tears to my eyes. She left me a $10 donation and took some of the materials. Another lady who was victimized that said, gave me a big hug and said she was so glad her father had molested her and that she was so glad she had forgiven him. There were 2 or 3 offenders who came up and shook my hand and were just so happy that somebody had finally been brave enough to put the word out there and actually talk about it. And so then I did a 6-week class and talked about a variety of issues that had to do with the building of the advocacy groups in Colorado, the myths and facts of sexual offending, and just a variety of subjects that I thought would be of interest. Again, the people that came were mostly people that had been touched by the subject. I had one person come that was a case manager at one of the halfway houses, and she said, when I heard what you said, I just had to come and get involved. And The whole goal for what I was doing was to try to get volunteers for Circles of Support and Accountability, and we actually did get three people that were not registered citizens that would be able to serve on a circle that signed up for Circles of Support. So that gives you a little bit of a sense of how long it takes, what the trail looks like to actually get people who have been touched on both sides of the issue, perhaps. There were other people in the church, I'm sure, many who had been victimized in their past. And so, you know, does that help a little bit to explain? I thought it was a long story to get to the point, but you get the sense of...
Yes, I did. Jennifer, did you have a question? Are there any questions in the queue? Again, it's star six.
I don't see any in the queue right now.
Okay, star six is what you'd press if you have any, if you have a question or comment or concern, and Jennifer can let you.
I'd love to hear what other people have tried in their states or what you might try at this point. I'd love to hear any ideas that you might have. Don't be shy.
But they were so quiet when we got started. Obviously, we haven't gotten them to talk.
We've got one.
Yay. Hi, Ken.
Actually, this is Ken Nolley in Oregon, and I'm going to have to get off really soon. So I thought I'd answer that and then also apologize for having to leave you, but we've got another thing happening this evening. I really liked what Susan said, and though she's done this a lot longer than we have, we've been at it about 5 years, and she's more than three times that. What she's saying is exactly what we feel like is working for us in Oregon. We've built coalitions with a lot of the groups or the kinds of groups that she has suggested. I mean, we're in the process at least of building those relationships. We find that there are things in the state where you can get inside the tent and be a part of a decision-making process. And as she said, it's often frustrating because things don't always go the way you want, or you only get a little bit, you're getting losses at the same time. But it feels like this is the best way to get ahead. And I would say one thing, without trying to repeat what she said, that is happening in Oregon that is really a great example of what Susan's talking about. Oregon just, in the last legislature, adopted a broad plan to reduce prison populations, to take the savings and put them into reducing crime up front and also providing victim services. So there is this what we call criminal justice reinvestment. And it's really a kind of restorative justice program that there's been a lot of work going on in broad coalitions across the state. We've worked with a lot of those people. In fact, sex offenders are specifically excluded from this group, but we have worked with it because it's doing the right thing in a broader way, and we think it's starting to build patterns that we will be able to use later. And I was at a meeting of all the counties in Oregon about 3 weeks ago. It's the second one of those meetings that's happened as we're just about to get funding to counties for the plans they've established. And what's incredible is that we've had huge problems that everybody has of runaway control of DAs who control the whole process and who don't want to give up power. But suddenly the counties are working together. What's happening is defense attorneys, prosecutors, judges, parole officers, treatment providers, everybody involved in the process in the counties is coming together at a county level, and they're talking, and they're beginning to feel like we're making better decisions than we ever have made. And it's unbelievable to see the changes that have taken in less, you know, in maybe less than a year. These things have really gone forward. We're still outside the tent as sex offenders, and yet I feel like by pushing this, supporting it, we're helping change a statewide climate that will make things better for us down the road. Pardon? Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I look forward to working with you both.
Hey, Susan, I have a question for you.
Okay.
How much effort have you put into getting registered citizens involved in the advocacy work itself? And just from my experience, you know, when I got into this, that's kind of the angle I went, thinking that registrants would just jump on board and everybody'd be gung-ho for doing advocacy work. And I found it to be largely the opposite. And so I definitely, you know, I see building coalitions with other groups is certainly the way to go. I was just interested in your experience about your contact with other registrants.
Well, I've shared some of this with Brenda in the past, but I think that being engaged with people throughout the system can be a very helpful thing in terms of when people get out, what they're willing to do and what they're willing to be involved with. So that's one of the reasons I work so hard to, if I get a call from a family, and I've had a lot of care management, case management kind of stuff in my background because of the kind of work that I've done. So that kind of, you know, blends over nicely into this other field when you have a family that all of a sudden has this very traumatic thing in their lives, and their child is being put on probation and the probation officer is being very tough, and you have a wonderful chance to sit down with that family over a Coke or at the local library or whatever and just talk with them for a half hour, 45 minutes, whatever, and you know, share with them just a little bit about what some of the things might be that they can expect, and they can share with you, you know, just what they're feeling at this point in time. And you get people on board early in the process. Unfortunately, a lot of people in Colorado end up going from probation to prison, as they probably do in other states as well. They just can't make it through the probation here. And so then, you know, if you continue to write to people in prison or at least send in a quarterly newsletter, you have people when they come out who call you. I had a guy that called me today and said, hey, I've been reading all that great stuff in the newsletter about all the changes that are happening since the outside evaluations, but here I am in a treatment program in Greeley, Colorado, and they're telling me I have to start over on everything I did in treatment in prison. And we've been telling them in the newsletters that we have been working with the SLMB Continuity of Care Committee on, you know, making sure that their new therapist on the outside knows what they did on the inside so they don't have to start over. And even if they have a long parole period, maybe they wouldn't have to be in treatment the whole time that they're on parole. We have 10- and 20-year parole tags. My son has a 10-year, and some people with more, I don't know what you'd call them, more higher-level crimes, have got 20-year parole on this lifetime sentence. And so, you know, they're talking about my son being the first person at 7 years out, maybe at 8 years out, to get to be able to be off treatment before he actually is able to ask to get off parole. So, you know, the expectations when these guys come out, when they are getting letters from us all along, telling them what's happening on the outside makes them better equipped, I believe, to come out and to say, I want to be a part of that battle. So this guy said to me, what can I do? I want to fight this. But he has to be very careful, because if that treatment provider has got control over his life, and just like my son almost went back to prison for doing absolutely nothing but asking to go to another treatment program, this man could end up back in prison because the treatment provider is still stuck back on the old no-known cure stuff that we got out of statute and out of the standards and guidelines. And because they're not in Denver and right close to the source of the SOMB here,
they aren't getting the message as fast. They've got that belief system and the old way of doing things, and so they haven't really picked up on moving forward. But the guys are coming out with an expectation that they're going to, you know, they're going to be doing something different, that they're going to get credit for what they did in prison, and that they can move forward and they can get through the, you know, through, they don't have to pay for all those classes over again and so on. So I think you come out with an energized workforce. He wanted to know what he could do. So I said, I'm going to get together all the information for you on the SOMB. You can give Chris Labana Frostovsky a call and tell him what you're telling. Tell him you talked to Susan Walker and, you know, what you're telling me about the fact that this program is not allowing you to progress forward. They're making you go back over everything you've already done. And if he hears from enough people like that, why, you know, yeah. I mean, I think we can figure out ways to engage people, but we somehow have to be involved with them or with their families or both
early
through
on.
The...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Thank you. Got another question.
Are you able to hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, okay, because I'm trying to use my computer. First time I used it to talk instead of a telephone. But anyway, you were talking about the circle of support. And is that something that you yourself participate or run?
Do you know what circles of support and accountability is?
Not really, because we started something called the Circle of Concern. At one of the RSOL meetings that we attended, the conventions, my wife heard about this circle of, I thought it was concern, but maybe it was support, was what we call our circle of concern. But anyway, could you tell me a little bit more about the circle of support? Maybe I could tell you what we're doing.
Sure. Okay, so Circles of Support and Accountability started in Canada out of the Mennonite churches up there. And basically what they found was that if they put a circle of four, five, six people around a person that had committed a sexual offense, even high-risk offenders, it was really a program that formed around high-risk offenders, that person seldom had a well, we were just talking about recidivism. I really didn't want to use the word recidivism, but seldom had
a reoffense for a sex offense.
They seldom had a reoffense for a sexual offense, and almost never. They had, you know, just a great record. And so what they've tried to do is replicate that. Thanks, Brenda. They've tried to replicate that program in different places. They tried a number of years ago in Colorado. They actually gave the Department of Corrections a grant to try to get that program started. And the first time that it was introduced, the parole and probation officers all stuck up their noses at it and said, you know, what is this silliness? We're not going to put up with these non-trained people coming in and providing support to these awful folks that we're watching over. And so it didn't go that first time, but two or three years later, they brought it back again, and this time it did go. They still had grant money, and so we have been able to get the circles of support and accountability program started. And so you meet once a week, and yes, I am involved in a circle. The circles program that I'm involved in is called Beyond Containment. Which I love. We have this, the author of the containment model is from Colorado, Kim English, and so I love Beyond Containment, which is the name that Mary Heffman, who's the leader of our particular program, chose. And there's also a Colorado COSA, a Colorado Circles of Support and Accountability, which is kind of the group that oversees it for the state. But it's been, again, it's like everything else we try to do in this field. It's very slow going. I think we have probably 12 to 15 circles going after a year and a half, 2 years, because you have the same problem that I had when I went to church. You have to recruit those volunteers, and it's just a very getting people to figure out what it's all about is very difficult. But the results are wonderful. I mean, the guys love it. And by the end of the year, it usually goes, you meet with them once a week for a year. And then at the end of that year, usually you've become friends and you're still available to the person, but you don't meet in a circle anymore. And you can go on and take on someone else that's coming out of prison. And in Colorado, it's actually a requirement that before someone gets out of prison, they have to meet 7 or 8 requirements. And one of those requirements is that they have to have a support person. And, of course, so many of our guys don't. They just don't have anybody, and their families have left them or whatever. They just don't have anybody waiting when they get out, so they can't get out. They've met all the other criteria, but they can't get out because they don't have support. So that's the urgency of us having the circles or having an individual support person. So what about your group now?
Okay, well, I am a little familiar about the Colorado, as far as an inmate getting out, needing a support. My wife was asked by somebody in the Colorado prison system if, she could be his support. And they sent her a big old package, you know, to fill out, and we're just starting to do that. But our circle of concern, what we kind of did was we got people. Well, yours is more of a mentoring program with people that are take one person at a time and have different mentors. But ours were made up of registered citizens in a group. We would meet together at a church and once a month. And we would have be able to support each other. Sometimes we'd have speakers come in and give a little ideas about how we could find work or what the registry is about and other things. But the other thing is that individuals that were would help other people that were coming in or that needed help. You know, we would share our concerns with one another. Sometimes, like food, we might bring some food and be able to distribute it. One person who just gotten out used to do tree and yard work, and he needed a chainsaw and hand tools, and we all got together and we, shovels or rakes or whatever, and before I knew it, he had his own truck and aside panels on it and his name on it, and he was going at it and he's still going at it. Another person had some land that sold it to another person, or a bike, or somebody needs a car ride from one place to another. The thing that we're having trouble with is just that everybody has to be off of probation or parole. We would like to somehow work with probation and parole to let people that are on probation and parole to come in and attend. It's a place where we can talk about our problems and support each other, and that's what we're doing in our circle of concern.
Have you gotten to know any of the parole officers to see, supervisors or whatever, to see whether you could get them moving in a direction of being willing to do that? They weren't willing at first, a number of years ago, for guys to come to our meetings, to Advocates for Change or to CISO meetings. But now everybody has permission to come. I haven't heard anybody that turns anybody down. So I think it's something you can keep working at, and you may see some success, because I agree it is great for them to be able to come. We even have guys coming right out of prison that are coming to the SOMB meetings and to the committee, subcommittee meetings, and are actually participating in the meeting and being recognized and talked to by the other folks in the group and greeted and treated like family members, so to speak. I mean, they're really being accepted. So,
cool. As far as probation, I'm working with one probation officer now, and he's been very helpful. Returning Citizens Collaboration, and we learn a lot about different programs that are going on about housing or whatnot. But one thing I was thinking, because not only do we have the Circle of Concern, we also I'm with. Well, we have a ministry called Titus House Ministries, and one thing that we do is We enter them with a gold sheet prior to them leaving. And once they leave prison, we try to help them up too. You know, I'll go pick them up from the bus stop, help them to get registered, you know, maybe get them a backpack and a belt or a wallet and take them to the halfway house that they might need to go to, and a number of other things. But, I'm kind of leery about it because I'm a registered citizen, and as far as, you know, them being on probation and parole, once they're getting out, you know, two felons are not supposed to be, together. So, you know, I'm just kind of a little bit leery about, you know, maybe I need to get permission to be from the probation and parole to be able to do that. But I don't know if I might be opening a can of worms that I don't want to. But anyway.
I suggest to people here that if they want to get together with somebody, that they do that. But I will tell you that my son, with his ministry, the Cell Church Ministry, has been cleared to be able to write to guys at prison, even though he's got three more years before he can ask to get off of this lifetime parole. And he is allowed to write to anybody at prison anybody that corresponds with him in his ministry, he can write to. And he's allowed to get together with a large number of people on the outside that have gotten out of prison. And all he does is ask for permission, and they ask for permission, and so far it's worked out fine. Now, I'm not saying they would grant it in every particular case, but I think it's something to work toward. I think it is good for guys to be able to, you know, friends that they've made that are healthy for them, that they should be able to get together when they get out. So, and some of our parole officers kind of make a difference between association and, you know, good association and bad association. So if they think that there's something that's going to lead to bad association, like drugs or alcohol, you know, that might perhaps, put somebody in a place where they might commit another offense of some sort of way, then they would be very leery of that. But if they think people are getting together for good reasons, you know, to play music or to, you know, whatever, just lift each other up in some way, why they're more supportive of that. So,
well, could you give me this?
I think we need to go ahead and wrap up at this point. We've been on the call now for going on hour and a half, and it is time for us to go ahead and thank Susan for being with us this evening again, and hope that you all will be back next month for our next Advancing Advocacy. Jennifer, remind me who's on next month. Is that...
It's Lenore.
Lenore Skenazy.
Many of you probably may have heard her at the conference a couple years ago, but you might look her up. Her website is freerangekids.org.
Yep.
And I think you'll really enjoy her.
And so I did do see a question here. Don was wondering the name of, if you could repeat that, your son's organization, Susan, that you said.
Oh, it's called the Cell Church. TheCellChurch.org.
CELL, I assume.
As in cell, correct.
Yeah, okay. TheCellChurch.org, okay. Anyway, again, thanks so much, and we do look forward to seeing you all next month. It'll be a week early again next month because of the Christmas holiday, and then we'll be back to our usual time and station. Thank you very much, and have a good rest of the evening, everyone.
Thanks, Susan.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.